Okay, good morning, everybody. Welcome to our Thursday morning class at the Yangazor of Vodmir. So today's class is really a reminder that Rabos Machshavos believe Ish, Ba'atzas Hashem, He Sakum. We have all kinds of plans, and we think we're going here, and we think we're going there, and we think there won't be Shir today, and then Atzas Hashem, He Sakum. So everyone should just be well. And the Ribbono Shel Olam should always guide us along the path where we're meant to be. Hamechin mitzadei gavur, he prepares the steps of man. So I didn't think I was going to be here today. And Susan Sokol sponsored the shiurim this week. And she reached out to Rabbi Schechter. Rabbi Schechter's Tuesday shiur and today's shiur should be sponsored the Zeichen Nishmas, her mother. So I told Rabbi Schechter, I'm not going to be there Thursday. So he said, so by the Shalosh Shuras, it should be an aliyah for her mother's neshama. And then yesterday I texted Rabbi Schechter. I said, wait, I'm giving shiur tomorrow, which I obviously got permission to reschedule the shiur. So this year, we thank Susan Sokol for her sponsorship to the Young Israel Woodmere Base Medrash program. May it be an aliyah neshama for Bracha Bas Yeshayahu, whose yahrzeit is Sunday 10 Kislev. May the neshama have an aliyah on the schus of the Torah that we will share this morning. So I'm very excited about today's shiur. Let me tell you how today's shiur came to be. Today's year came to be not only because Hashem kept me in New York and not in Denver, but today's year came to be because I am learning with a very small group of young women who are Risu Chozro B'Teshuva. It's extremely special and inspiring to see their interest in the text and in learning. And it's amazing. It's very, very inspiring. So this past week, when we finished our learning, we did the first few psukim in Vayetze. So one of the young ladies said to me, you know, I was looking through the parasha and I was hoping you were going to talk about this idea of love at first sight. Like, you know, coming from the secular world. No, I'm not making a joke. It's extremely inspiring to learn with them. You should, I'm learning with them from after the Abim Tovim, once a week, Baruch Hashem. It's amazing. But that's what she said to me. So it's very interesting because she said, what's this idea of love at first sight? That Yaakov came to the well and he loves Rachel right away. And how did he know that this is the one for him? And he's crying and he kissed her. She said, I hope you would be speaking about that. So I didn't know that that's what she wanted to talk about. And I prepared just the first few psukim in the parasha to discuss, and I said to her, you know, it's so funny, I just read a piece by Rabbi Dr. Abram J. Twersky on love. So I said, but next week we're already going to be in the next parasha, so I don't think we're going to have time to learn it. So this year was inspired by Jennifer's question, what is this idea of first love? And having just read that piece by Rabbi Dr. Twersky the day or two before we met, I thought it would be a very nice idea for us to explore what is love in the Torah, and what is the Jewish view of Ahava. And this year, I'm very excited. This year took me a very long time to prepare. I did not know I was going to be here, of course, so it took me quite a few hours yesterday to work on this year. And with Hashkacha of the Ribbono Shel Olam, Siyata Dishmaya, Baruch Hashem, it came together. So I'm very excited by it, and I think that it's very interesting. What is love in the Torah? And thank you to Jennifer for your interesting question. So open up to page 150, just to make it easy for all of you. For those of you who are at home, Perak Chof Tes, please. Okay, Perak Chof Tes, Pasuk Tes Zayin. Okay, so we know the basic story. Yaakov has a dream in the Perak Chof Ches, beginning in Pasuk Yod, and the angels are going up and down, and there's God, and he wakes up, and he says, wow, Hashem is in this place, and I didn't even know. And he picks up his feet, and he goes to the land of the Easterners, and he shows up at the well, and why are you, why are you just loitering here? Take off the rock. By the way, did anyone read my written Dvar Torah this morning yet? Make sure to read it. It's really, 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 it's one of my favorite insights as Rabbi Dr. Norman Lam, Zichron Avraham. Please read it. So he rolls the rock off the well, and then he sees this beautiful Rachel, and he kisses her, and he gives flocks to drink. So now let's look. Perek Chof Tes Pasuk Tet Zayin, okay? Chapter 29, verse 16. Yes, you must have the handout. If you didn't pick it up when you came in, you need to get it, okay? Ulalavan shtei banos, and Lavan had two daughters. So who was Lavan? Yaakov's uncle. Okay? Shem Hagdola Leah, Vashem Haktana Rachel. The name of the older daughter was Leah, and the name of the young one is Rachel. And the eyes of Leah are very tender, and Rachel was of beautiful appearance and beautiful to look at. Vaye'ahav Yaakov et Rachel. Now, he never met this woman before this incident at the well, and now he goes home with her, you know. Vaye'ahav Yaakov et Rachel. And yet he loves Rachel. Vayomer. And he says to Lavan, I will work for 7 years for Rachel, your younger daughter. And Lavan said, you know what? It's a good idea. Better I should give her to you. You're my mishpacha. Then give her to someone else. Stay here. And Yaakov worked for Rachel for 7 years. Vayu be'enav kiyamim achadim ba'ahava so oso. Once again, we are told that he loves her. So 7 years passes by just in a few days because of his love for her. And Yaakov says to Lavan, give me my wife, because, you know, my term of payment has been up. My payment is 7 years. I worked the 7 years, so now I'm going to come to my wife. One second, I just want to see something. Okay, so I'm going to skip a little. So they make a wedding, and there's a big mishta. Why did you trick me? We don't do this in our place, to put the tzira in before the bechira. The medra says, maybe in your place, you, the younger, go before the older. But in our place, we don't do that. It was mida kenega mida. And if you look at, so Lavan says, if you want to work for 7 more years, then you could have Rachel also. So after the Shavuot Brachos, he marries Rachel, and then he has to work 7 years to his payment. Okay, pasuk lamed. Vayavo gam el Rachel, vayahav gam et Rachel mileya. So this is the third time in this relationship that we are seeing that Yaakov really loves Rachel more than Leah, and he works for Lavan another 7 years. Oh, where was I? Up to one more pasuk I wanted to show you. Oh, and then in contrast to that, Pasuk Lamed Aleph, what about Leah? So we have been told repeatedly that in regard to Rachel, there's a feeling of Ahava. And what about Leah? Vayar Hashem, we learned about this last night, honey. Vayar Hashem ki snua Leah. Hashem saw that Leah was the opposite of Ahava, is snua. And in fact, when she has Reuven, Leah herself expresses a desire for her husband's love. So love plays a very prominent role in the story of Yaakov Shiduchim. What does she say about Reuven? Ki ra Hashem ba'ani, ki ata yehavani ishi. She is longing for the love that Yaakov gives to Rachel clearly. When we look at, so you could sort of leave your finger on the place or not, I don't know, in Parachof Dalid, oh, it's on your hand, you don't need to turn, just to make it easy, okay? The middle of page 1, on your hand, and I just want to show you what about his father and his mother. So it's the last pasuk of Parachof Dalet Samech Zayin, after the whole shidduch is made. On your hand, it says Bereishis 24:67. Okay, so it's the middle of page 1. Actually, I'm going to screen share for you ladies who are at home. One second. Here we are. No. One second. I have to find the handout for you. Sometimes I share the wrong screen. So someone needs to tell me, if you could see here, that it says Bereishis 22:2. Paula Spodak, I gotta have to see your face. Yes? Okay, it's the right sheet. Okay, so here we go. Okay, so but I'm not just focusing on that first. Bereishis 24:67. I just highlighted. Paula, could you see it's highlighted on my screen? What about Yitzchak and Rivka? So the pasuk says, after the shidduch, she comes home. Vayivieha Yitzchak ho ahala Sarah imo. Yitzchak brings her to the tent of Sarah, his mother. Vayikaches Rivka, he takes Rivka. Vatihi lo liisho, she is to him a wife. Vayaha veha, and he loves her. And so Yitzchak is comforted after his mother. So what is this idea of love? And like Jennifer said to me, he just showed up at the well and it's love at first. I'm not making fun, I'm being serious. How do we understand this idea of love in the Torah? And what is the Torah viewpoint? One thing we know, it's definitely different than the secular viewpoint. It has to be different than the secular viewpoint. So when is the first time we have, the first time anything appears in Torah is extremely significant. The first time a shoresh, I should say, appears in Torah is significant. When is the first time Ahava appears in Torah? It's the first source on your handout, right? That is by the Akedah, by Akedas Yitzchak. Bereishis Chof Beis, Pasuk Beis. Vayomer, and Hashem comes to one fine day, Avayachar dvarim ha'ela v'alukim nisa es Avram v'yomer Avram v'yomer hineni ah kachna es bincha es yechidcha asher ahavta. Take your son, your only one, the one you love, es Yitzchak, v'lechecha eretz ha'moria. We learned about this a few weeks ago, and you came over to me about Alon Moray, which I forgot to tell in the shir, which was a great geshmak, added insight after shir, but we're not focusing on that today. Kachna es bincha es yechidcha asher Ahafta, as Yitzchak v'lechecha al eretz ha'moria v'aleihu sham la'ola, so bring him up as an ola offering. How is Yitzchak defined? Not only as your son, and not only as your only one, but also as the one that you love. So I went to look up Rav Shamshur Fal Hirsch, because Rav Shamshur Fal Hirsch focuses very much on the meaning of Shorashim, and that really studying and learning and teaching Rav Hirsch is what has made me so aware of the importance of focusing on Shorashim in my own learning of Chumash and Tanakh, because Rav Hirsch really focuses on Shorashim. So I figured this is the first place it appears in Chumash. It must be Rav Hirsch comments on it. Bingo, he does. So I gave it to you on the handle. To Rav Hirsch, the first time we have this appearance of Ahava, Rav Hirsch, who focuses on the Shorashim to help us identify the message of the Torah, says as follows. I gave it to you on your handout. Asher Ahavta. I worked very, very hard, many hours on this year, Baruch Hashem. I'm very excited about it. You're welcome to keep the handouts. My point is that I try to take out the Seamus, but sometimes I find that I forget. So just always be careful with my handouts. There's a Seamus box in the hallway. So if you know, please be careful. If you want to take it home and bring it back next week, just don't throw them in the garbage, because sometimes I miss Shem Hashem by accident. So let's see. What is one second, please? What does Rav Shamshur Fal Hirsch have to say? Asher Ahavta. The root word is Aleph Hey Beis. Aleph Hey Bet. From the two-letter word Hav, give. So maybe some of you are familiar with that. No, I see it's a surprise for you. I'm going to later prove it to you in our parsha. The root word Ahava, Ahav, okay, Ahava is love. Aleph Hey Beis, or Aleph Hey Bet, is the root. But that can be broken down further into a two-letter root, which is hey bet, which means to give. Hav means to give. Now, interesting, Rav Hirsch says, and now the hav, to give, two-letter root, is prefixed with an aleph. So the prefix is aleph, and the root is actually hey bet. Refers to the active personality. What does this mean? The aleph refers to the person themselves. That makes sense, the anochi of the person. So hav is to give, and aleph refers to the active personality. So the active personality, the ani, is a giver. And that's what love means. And we're going to spend the whole shiur talking about it, but that's what love means. It means, quote, you can follow along. Look at the lashon of Rav Hirsch. To give oneself up to another, and to seek to draw the other exceedingly close to oneself. And if you think of any relationship in your life that is defined, that you would define by love, I would venture to say that that is a perfect definition. It is, on the one hand, to give yourself up to another, but you expect something back. You seek to draw the other exceedingly close to you through giving to them. What you are doing is drawing them close to you. That's, as refers to, the definition of ahava. Ahav is to give, and the aleph before is the active personality, the ani or the anochi. So I, aleph, am giving hav to you, and through my giving, I draw you close to me, exceedingly close to oneself. By the way, the italics in Rav Hirsch are in the original. I did not add them. They are in the original. That is to strive to attain, italics in the original, a most intimate association with someone. Through I, aleph, hav, giving to you, I seek to draw you close to me. Why do you look confused? What? Yeah, my name is on the bottom, left corner. Does everyone have it? It says Vayetze 5782 on top, Yangisho of Vladimir 1121. We're in Rav Shamshur Fal Hirsch? Are we okay?
Don't worry about me.
Okay. It's to strive to attain a most intimate. So through I, Aleph, Hav, giving, I draw you close to me, and then I strive to have a most intimate association with this person. The opposite of a Hav is, and this is so funny, this is the first time it appears, he's talking about the Akedah. No, he's not talking about the Akedah. He's talking about the root word, a Hav, but it relates to our passage where I showed you. There are two psukim that are juxtaposed one to another. One pasuk says, Parachav Tes Pasuk Lamed. One pasuk has told us, "Vayavo gam el Rachel, vayahav gam et Rachel mileya." And the very next pasuk tells us, "Vayar Hashem kisnu aleya." And the very next pasuk says, "Leya says, ato yevani ishi." So he loves Rachel. Hashem sees that Leya is snua, and Leya says, "Maybe my husband will love me." So reverse says, "What is the opposite of ahav? Aleph, hey, bet this three letter shorish is sanei." Is, I shouldn't really pronounce it. It's not pronounced. It's a root. Sin nun aleph. The opposite of aleph hey bet, which we translate as to love, is sin nun aleph, which is translated in English as to hate. Related to samich nun hey. What is samich nun hey? Hashem appeared to Moshe Rabbeinu in the burning bush. The burning bush was a thorn bush. Vayarkia sneh einenu ukal. Sneh means essentially to be a thorn. So what is the root of sin nun aleph? That person is a thorn in my side. Therefore, you want to fend them off and keep them as far away from oneself as possible. And Rachman al-Tzan, yes, it's true. If there's someone who a person feels great animosity to, you may very, very likely feel that they are a thorn in your side. Sin nun aleph is related to samach nun hey. To hate is related to thorn bush, because that person says Rav Hirsch. So Rav Hirsch focuses so strongly on the etymology of words. And if you ever want to know how to translate, or I should say explain or identify a shoresh, my advice is go to Rav Shamsher Fal Hirsch, because his pshat on through Tanakh and specifically shoreshim is brilliant. To fend off the avodah and keep them as far away from oneself as possible. For ahava, this is beautiful. Look at the last line of Rav Hirsch. Look in your notes. For ahava, another's presence is required. I want you in my presence if I love you. For Sina, his complete removal is required. Just like if you have a thorn in you. I remember when I was younger, I don't know, must have been around my age of Bas Mitzvah. So we were visiting Eretz Yisrael, and we were in the north, and we were in some, I don't know, desert, or maybe just by the side of the road, and there was a sabra plant, there was a cactus plant, and I was a Canadian kid, and I didn't know that it's full of invisible thorns also. It's not just the big prickly ones that stick out. Public service announcement, don't ever touch one in the wilderness, because it's actually full of teeny, invisible almost thorns. If you look close, you could see them. And my whole palm, I still remember, was full of those thorns. You try and get out with a credit card, and they really hurt. So what is a thorn? With ahava, aleph, hey, bet, I, achad, ani, want to give hav to you. I draw you close to me. I seek a most intimate relationship, whereas sin nun aleph, translated as to hate, is related to samech nun hey, a thorn, because the removal of that person from your presence is the ultimate goal. Now, it's very interesting. I gave it to you on your handout, and that's the next source on your handout. And that is that if you look at the root word aleph hey bet, what page are you all on? Did you turn? You where did you stay? On page 152? Are you still in Parachav Tet? Yeah? So if you look at Pasuk Lamed, okay, you'll see it. If you're in Parachav Tet, look at Pasuk Lamed, look at Targum Unklus. Look at Unklus to 29:30. Bereshis 29:30. Your Chumash should still be open. I'm telling you to look in the Chumash, not the handout. Bereshis 29:30 with Unklus. The Al Af Levat Rachel, and he came to Rachel. He accompanied Rachel. Urichem Af Ya Rachel Mileya. Targum Unklus consistently in Chumash translates, and it's not a translation, it's an explanation. Unklus's interpretation of Aleph Hey Bet is always Reish Chet Mem, which also tells us something very significant about love. For example, look at Unklus to Pasuk Lamed Beis. Unklus to Chof Tes Lamed Beis, the last words of Unklus. Okay, let's just look at the whole Unklus to make it easier. Parachav Tes, Pasuk Lamed Beis, chapter 29, verse 32. Va'adi at Leah conceived. V'yilidat bar, she gave birth to a son. Ukrat shemei Reuven, she called his name Reuven. Are Ameret, because she said, Are gili kadam Hashem uboni, revealed before God has been my shame. Are ke'an yiricha minani ba'ali. What did I tell you? Now my husband will love you, will love me. What is Unkus's explanation always of Aleph Hey Bet on Chomish? You see, I just gave it to you in two psukim. Reish Ches Mem. Rachem is Uncas. Now, how do we translate Rachem? To be merciful or to be compassionate? So now we learn something else from Uncas. We've learned of Hirsch. Uncas will always translate Aleph Hey Bet. I stop saying translate. English is a translation. Uncas is a commentator, and it's a pshat, not a translation. Uncas's pshat of Aleph Hey Bet, to love, is always Reish Ches Mem, to be merciful or to be compassionate. To love someone is to be merciful towards them, to have compassion for them. And it's no wonder then that the woman, the primary source of giving love to her child, nurtures and grows the child in the uterus, which in Lashon HaKodesh is called a rechem. Once we're back again to that shoresh, reishcha mem, because the rechem, vayivtach et rachma, later in this parsha, parak lamid, vayishma elokim el rachal, vayishma elokim et rachal, Vayiftach et rachma, vatahara teleid ben. So he opened her womb. So racham is the same root word as rachmim. It is the woman who is the giver of the most love and the primary caregiver to her child. And going back to her first, to love is to give. It's the woman who gives unconditionally to the child. First she gives her body to that child for 40 weeks. Then she gives her milk to the child. Then she gives her sleep to the child. Then she gives her patience to the child. Then she gives the food to the child. My son was out. He's Kenayner at 24 and a half. It was out very late. And I wrote back, try not to be too late, be safe. And then I wrote, sorry, once you're a mother, you're always a mother. So the rachamim extends forever, no matter what age, and it begins in the womb, and that is Targum Unkus's interpretation of Aleph Hey Bet. To love is to be merciful and compassionate. Did you want to say something? I don't really have time. Did you want to say something? No, you had your hand before, no? No? Okay. So therefore, to love is to be merciful. And the next two sources on your handout are two psukim that we already looked at. Bereishis 29:18, towards the bottom of page 1, and you know where I am? Towards the bottom of page 1, middle of page 1. Vayahav Yaakov et Rachel, vayomer. We saw this already. Yaakov loved Rachel. And then in 24:67, which we also already saw, we have this idea of Yitzchak loving Rivka. So now I'm going to quote Salvechik, not the piece on your handout. That's coming much later in Shir, okay? So now put the handout aside for a few minutes, and just when on the Chumash, I'm going to quote the Rav. Talking about the fact that the woman is the mother, I should say, is the primary giver. Even in the animal kingdom, by the way, there are exceptions, but generally in the animal kingdom, after the male fertilizes the female, there are certain exceptions. He leaves, and it is she, the female, who gives and raises and nurses the child. Rav Soloveitchik says, we know from daily experience, says the Rav, that the father loves to stand beside the baby's cradle and rock it when the baby is clean. If the baby dirties his diaper, and like in the animal kingdom, I'm not making a joke, there are exceptions to this as well. If the baby dirties his diaper, the father will often immediately call the mother to clean the baby, and he stands aside. The mother, on the other hand, is constantly ready to clean the baby and do all the necessary and unpleasant tasks. That's a quote from Rav Soloveitchik. Furthermore, says the Rav, this is a quote that I put together from two totally different Sfarim. First one is Chumash Masoras HaRav Vayikra. The next one is from the Sefer Family Redeemed. Says the Rav, but these two quotes, I think, go together. In contradistinction to the father, the mother holds on to her child. She refuses to let go. Her desire is to always be a part of the child. So the desire for the child to be part of her and her to be part of the child begins in the rachem, when she grows the child in her rachem, and then it continues in life as she loves the child. But what is the definition of love according to Unkus? It's to continue that reish ches mem relationship. The relationship of rachamim from mother to child must continue. The mother can never perform, says the Rav, an act of withdrawal. On the contrary, she surges steadily forward to her child. For the mother, no matter how old and independent the latter is, and I wasn't making a joke when I just gave you that example, for the mother, no matter how old and independent the child is, the image of the baby, the memory of the infant she held in her arms, the image of herself playing, laughing, embracing, nursing, cleaning, it never vanishes. She always looks upon her child as the baby who needs her help and her company. And she always looks upon her child as whom she has to protect and shield, no matter her age. As a matter of fact, says the Rav, this is from the Sefer Family Redeemed, the mother can never forget the biological fact that the child was once a part of her. That's the ultimate giving. When the mother grows that child, obviously I know it's a Ribbono Shel Olam, but when the mother physically has the child within her, she gives everything to the baby. She gives sustenance, she gives nutrients, she gives warmth, she gives whatever vitamins the baby needs, she gives her blood. The fact was once, the mother can never forget the biological fact that the child was once a part of her. She gave her blood, she brought him into the world with her suffering and her pain. When she says, my baby, she means, once we were one body, I gave you life. This relates back to Rav Hirsch. Aleph, hey, bet. Aleph is the prefix of Hav. I, the Ani, the Anochi, the mother, is the ultimate hey, bet, giver to that child, which leads to the most deepest bond of a loving relationship. We together were involved in the same organic process, thinks the mother. Neither can she ever dismiss from her mind the sleepless nights in which in anguish she watched over her sick, feverish child. She remembers all of her prayers, she remembers all of her vows because of that child. So this helps us very deeply understand how the womb, Vayiftach et Rachma, God opened her womb. Racham is the definition, according to Onkelos, of to love, because to love is to be merciful and to love is to give. And that connection of mercy and compassion upon to whom one that you gave their very life never ceases to be. How do we understand the love of the Avos for the Imahos? Yitzchak to Rivka, Yaakov to Rachel, like Jennifer said to me, and it's a very valid question. I was hoping you were going to talk about this idea of love at first sight. He just appears at the well and all of a sudden he loves her. So how do we understand that? With all of that is our introduction. So I'm now quoting from a Sefer Generation to Generation by Rabbi Dr. Abram J. Twersky. And I told Jennifer, you know, it's so funny. I said, I just read a piece on this Rabbi Dr. Twersky. I don't think we're going to have time to go through it together here. So, Azor Hashem, I will send her the recording. So, let's quote from Rabbi Dr. Abram J. Twersky. And he speaks specifically about this very idea. And he quotes from our Parsha, where Yaakov loves Rachel. So, what is love? And, of course, Rabbi Dr. Twersky doesn't just bring Das Torah along with him, but he also has Das human beings, what the human psyche is, what human emotions are, medical science, empathy, understanding of the human mind, brain, emotions, along with his great knowledge of Torah. Okay. The fact that one's... So here we go. Let me just see something. Just bear with me, okay? The fact that one's distress, one person's distress can affect another. So when you're in pain and you go to someone you're close to and you speak to them, now they're in pain. Why are they in pain if you're the one who's in pain? How does this work? The fact that one person's distress can affect another is said to be one of the reasons why sharing your troubles can alleviate some of your suffering. How can sharing your troubles alleviate some of your suffering? Suppose that for whatever reason, says Rabbi Dr. Twersky, it was decreed by the heavenly tribunal that person A undergo a painful experience. A unburdens to his friend, person B. If B is a true friend, B will now be distressed by A's pain. A must be relieved then of some misery. He transferred it onto person B. Says Rabbi Dr. Twersky, B was not decreed in heaven to suffer with this Nisayon. You were decreed to suffer with this Nisayon. In transferring some of your pain, they alleviate and take away some of your burden. To genuinely feel the pain of another person, says Rabbi Dr. Twersky, is to help him. Even if you can do nothing active to change the situation. So just expressing your rachamim, reish chas tmem, is a sign of your love. Just giving ani heibet, I am giving, even if it's only time and a listening ear, is an expression of love. It's brought down in the biography of Rav Nesson Tzvi Finkel Zatzal. It was just his 10th Yahrzeit in Cheshvan. Rav Nesson Tzvi Finkel Zatzal, who was afflicted with severe Parkinson's the last 2 decades of his life, petitioners would come to him. And one time a woman came to him and he was so physically weak and unwell. When she came in, he said, "I'm sorry, I can't do anything for you." He said, "I'm going to lay on the couch. You say to Hillel, I'll lay on the couch and cry. And like that, I will be with you." To genuinely feel the hurt of another person is to help him, even if you can do nothing active to change his situation. So sometimes the giving means ani or anochi hav, I'm giving. Sometimes it means food. Sometimes it means money. Sometimes it means clothing. Sometimes it means doing laundry. Sometimes it means cooking supper. All expressions of your love. And sometimes it can't be anything physical. You can't necessarily have anything to give. Sometimes it means giving my tefillos, giving my empathy, giving myself, giving my emotion. And now, I think the day before Jennifer asked me this question. In a culture so obsessed with love, in a culture so obsessed with love, and in which young people marry because they, quote, have fallen in love, there must be something drastically wrong when better than 40% of all marriages terminate in divorce. I'll tell you, this was copyright 1985. Some so quickly, one wonders whether the partners even had the opportunity to discover whether indeed they were actually in love. It would seem that the people involved had indeed fallen in love. Such love should certainly have greater substance and durability. If we just know what usage is given to the word love, the mystery is solved. In modern society, how do we use the word love? One can love a fashionable garment. One can love a tasty dish. That's his quote. I love that restaurant. I love sufganiyot on Hanukkah. I love chalva from the shuk. I love my new dress. I love a new sheita. Is that the same term by which we love other human beings? Says Rabbi Dr. Twersky, this helps us solve the mystery. What is love in today's society? I loved my steak at the restaurant last night. I love the new dress I just bought. I love my vacation that I didn't go on. It is abundantly clear that the word love, listen carefully to, so we saw Rav Hirsch, we saw Onklus, I brought you a piece from the Rav related to Onklus. No pun intended. My sheer preparation is a labor of love. It took me a long time, but it really is not I love the steak kind of love. It is abundantly clear that the word love is used to refer to gratification of one's desires. I love the steak. It gratified my need for a tasty meal and food. I love the dress means I love how I look in the dress. I love the book. The book took me to another realm. I love the movie. It was fabulous. I love something that gives me any sort of pleasant sensation. This is not the Torah viewpoint of love. It's the secular viewpoint of love. In this sense, quote, love is essentially self-love. I love what makes me feel good. And the so-called love of another simply means the other person satisfies my desires. That is not the Torah viewpoint of love. Don't write that down as the Torah viewpoint of love. This is the secular viewpoint of love. What makes me feel good, taste good, look good, I love. It is little wonder then that relationships based on love, which is love of the self and are self-directed, can be very fleeting. Why? When that person no longer adequately satisfies my desires, or when that person now constitutes a burden that the demands outweigh the self-gratification, or if I find another person who provides me with even greater self-gratification, the basis for the relationship ceases. And so the relationship terminates. the not Jewish, not Torah view of love is, what can you do for me? And once you no longer serve a purpose fulfilling my needs, my wants, my physical desires, I no longer have use for that food, that object, that dress, or Rachmana Letzlan, that person. This is not the Torah viewpoint. It's not our perspective. Not all love, however, is self-love. There does exist an outwardly directive love, and that's the Torah viewpoint of love. Instead of inner-directed and inner-focused, it's outer-directed and outer-focused, which emanates from the appreciation and admiration for another person. Think of someone who, not like you love, like the steak. No, I'm being serious. Someone who you love. You should feel, if it's true love, appreciation and admiration for that person. If you don't, ask yourself, why not? And how exactly do you love them? Outward directive love, has totally different characteristics than self-directed love. You know, the next time we go out for a nice dinner, we should all think carefully before we say, I love that restaurant. I am sure many a time in my life I have used that expression. Love that is not self-directed. Love that is not self-directed is so rare, it may be difficult for us in our society to even comprehend it, says Rabbi Dr. Twersky. As an example, take the biblical account of Jacob's love for Rachel. Yaakov's love for Rachel. Yaakov worked for 7 years to win the hand of Rachel, but it appeared to him as Yamim Achadim Ba'ahava So Usa, because he loved her. Rabbi Dr. Twersky quotes, at first glance, this makes no sense. It's really interesting because in Two Others Farm, he gives an answer for Yamim Achadim. One of you, I know, Rachi Fried, Paul Spodok, you were in Shir yesterday. We gave his reason. Here in this Sefer, he doesn't explain Yamim Achadim, even though in another Two Farm he does. I'm not going to take the time right now to go through it. But there's a beautiful answer as to Yamim Achadim. Okay, but we're not going through that now. At first glance, it makes sense. For a man who is separated from a woman he loves for 7 years, every day must seem like an eternity. Why does the Torah state it appeared that Yaakov's profound love for Rachel, that it appeared to him that 7 years was but a few days? We cannot even understand this, says Rabbi Dr. Twersky. He writes that. We do not understand this. This is a Sefer generation to generation. In my edition, page 35. Because the love we are so familiar with is primarily self-directed. What can you do for me? But we already saw the shorish of Rav Hirsch. That's not correct. The true definition of love is, what can I, ani, or anochi, prefix aleph, have, give to you? And when desires are denied, even a brief period of frustration may appear endless. If you're not fulfilling my need, then I am totally frustrated, and that lack of my needs seems endless. Outward-directed love obeys different rules. Long periods may appear brief, and if we cannot understand this, he says, it's probably because we don't have a concept of true outward-directed love. He says he had the opportunity to witness outward-directed love in his parents. Firstly, they were not drawn together by infatuation, which is such a problem today. And it's because the secular idea of love has infiltrated our Torahic communities. So we and our children do not understand what Torah love is. First of all, my parents, as Rabbi Dr. Twersky, were not drawn together by infatuation or by a desire for the other to satisfy the self. Their marriage was arranged by their parents. Imamish writes this. I thought the halach is the chasanis to see the kal under the chuppah. I don't know. They met for the first time under the chuppah. That's what he writes. Secondly, they knew they were to share their lives in order to achieve a goal in which they both believed. So by each one giving to the other, this shared goal could be accomplished, not by each one taking from the other. Mother and father grew to appreciate each other. They were subjected to stress and divisive forces, which would have shattered our relationship based on self-love. They remain together because their bond could be overcome. Their bond could not be overcome by frustration and distress. Listen to the following sentence carefully. Outward-directed love, which is the Torah viewpoint of love, is characterized, listen carefully, outward-directed love is characterized not by what the other can provide for me, but what I can do for him or her. Outward-directed love is characterized not by what the other person can do for me, but what I can do for the other person. Let's go back to Rav Soloveitchik. Okay? So what is the Torah definition of love? Outward-directed love. Not what you do for me. Oh, wait, I wanted to end. I'm skipping some of what I wanted to quote because I'm going to run out of time. But the end is, I want to tell you this. Our language lacks a word to distinguish one type of love from another. The problem is we lump everything together. The steak, the dress, the shaito, the vacation, the manicure, the exercise at the gym is all lumped together with how you feel about your husband or your children. Or your best friend, or your aunt, or your mother, or your sister. The same word that is used to express how one feels about meat and potatoes, I'm quoting, is also used to describe a devotion of self-sacrifice. Perhaps even our ideas become as impoverished as our words. How tragic. I didn't write it into the shiur, but I'm going to tell it to you. I found it extremely interesting that there are two times in Bereishis when you have the term love, not in regard to people, but in regard to food. Yeah? Asa with what? Doesn't say he loved the soup. I thought you were going to say something else. It has something to do with Esav.
Did Yitzchak love it?
Yitzchak and what?
Did Yitzchak love what Esav gave him?
Oh! V'asei li mat amim ka'asher ahavti. 27:4. Parshas Toldos. It's page 134 in Archumash. He calls Esav, I am old, I do not know the day of my death. Get your hunting implements, trap for me game, and make for me tasty delicacies, ka'asher ahavti, like I love, v'havia li v'ochela, ba'avur tivarechecha nafshi b'terem amus. Bring me tasty food like I love, so my soul can bless you before I die. Pasuk Tes, same parak, 27:9. The mother, Rivka, calls her son Yaakov, and she says, please go to the flocks, bring me two young goats, the Esa Osam mat amim la'avicha ka'asher ahev. So two times in Bereishis, actually, love, like Rabbi Dr. Tursky says, is referred to towards meat and potatoes, and not towards another person. The reason I didn't write it into my shiur, it's nowhere in my shiur notes, is because I'm not sure how we understand this. I don't have a pshat into it. Because the Torah viewpoint of love, as we are learning today, from many sources, is totally contradictory to saying you went to the nice restaurant and you love that restaurant. I love Alan Sufganiyot. It happens to be I do love Alan Sufganiyot. But maybe I should phrase that a little bit differently. I was thinking, I don't know. I have no idea if this is true or not. I wasn't even going to say it, but I'm saying it because I just read Dr. Tversky. Says, how could we use the same word to describe our relationship with meat and potatoes that we use to describe our relationship with our most intimate association? Maybe. I don't know. Maybe. It's part of the reason why the switching of the brachos went so badly. When Yaakov blesses Ephraim and Menashe, we do not see any calamity result.
even though he puts the bechor, the tzeir before the bechor. But when Yitzchak blesses the tzeir before the bechor, it goes down in history as one of the worst calamities ever for Knesset Yisrael. Halacha hi biyadua she'esav shona the Yaakov. I don't know if what I'm proposing is emes or not, but it's very compelling that the two times in Bereishis when love is used to describe food. Wait, I just saw something. I want to see what Unkla says. No, I'm not joking. I bet you he doesn't use the root word reish chasmem. He does. Unklus does. So that means Yaakov is really saying, I love that food. I thought Unklus might translate it differently, but he doesn't. So maybe, because love here seemed to be misappropriated. Did I say the word right? Use the word right? That this ends, it's again in Pasuk Yudalad. Vayenech, vayikach, vayaveli imo, vatas imo matamim kasher ahev aviv, targum unkus, kimadirachem avuhu, avuhi. So it's very interesting. I don't know, it's food for thought, yeah? Wait, I didn't hear, start again. Doesn't say that. Doesn't say bring me food so I could bless you because I love you. It specifically says matamim kasher ahafti leman tivarachucha nafshi lifnei mosi. I don't know. Okay, 1 second. So Mrs. Feiner says Yitzchak was speaking to Esav, who understood love in terms of food. That's the way Esav viewed life. Rivka's referring to that. But Rivka's not really referring to that when she talks to Yaakov. She didn't have to use the term to Yaakov like your father loves. You could say like Esav loves food. I don't know. It's food for thought. There's no pun intended. Let's go back to the Rav. Very powerful piece, and therefore I put it on your handout for you. Oh! Patty, Shapnachas. This is from Chakira, from Rabbi Jonah Steinitz's publication, piece on the Rav's eulogy. You have the footnote of where this is from, okay? On bottom of page 2. It's from Chakira, volume 30, this past summer. This was presented as a eulogy by the Rav for his close friend, the conservative rabbi, Rabbi Shubo, in Ella 5729, September 1969. That's given to you on page 2, footnote 30. So we thank Rabbi Jonah Steinmetz for helping us access this very powerful and very beautiful piece by the Rav. And the Rav says, well, you could tell by Steinmetz, this is the first time I'm teaching anything from that piece. Here we go. Yes, man, I forgot, I can't see anyone here. Okay, Paula, you're the one that I could see right now. Could you see my piece? Okay, so you guys could follow along online. Rabbi Joseph B. Salvechik, the Rav writes, yes, man possesses an angelic quality. Man must at certain times act, laugh, rejoice, grieve, cry, beg, pray, and dream like a child. Do you not know where I am? Some people are turning their paper over. I'm right in the middle of page 1.
Page 1.
Right. The footnote is on page 2. I was just telling you where the source was from. I'm in the middle of page 1, right in the middle. Man possesses an angelic quality. At certain times, man must act, laugh, rejoice, grieve, cry, beg, pray, and dream like a child. If man matures completely, if man matures intellectually, emotionally, if your soul, if your mind, if your will, if your sentiment ripen and reach the stage of adulthood, and you abandon the child along the way, man loses one of the basic attributes of humanity. And the image of man is impaired. You must take my hand out home. Now I'm not recommending it. You got to learn this piece of the Rav in depth. If you want next week to put it in Seamus, bring it home and put it in Seamus. What happens if man matures completely, totally matures intellectually, emotionally? If your soul, if your mind, if your will, if your sentiment ripen and reach the age of adulthood and you abandon the child within, you travel the highway to maturity and you leave behind your child, not your external child, your own child. Man loses one of the basic attributes of humanity, and the image of man is impaired. Why? No matter how high a man rises, no matter how mature the intellect becomes, no matter how sophisticated you are, regardless of whatever thorough and complex training you received, no matter how sharp your mind, how analytic and comprehensive, the non-critical, naive, miserable man must at the same time be a happy child, and he must never forsake the child within. The Rav is explaining in very powerful language. Let's tone it down so we understand what he's saying. No matter how mature and intellectual you become, no matter how grown up you are, you should never fully abandon the child who lives within you. The child within must never die with the arrival of adulthood. Man must be able to give sometimes. He must give. Friendship unselfishly. This ties in exactly to our Shir. I hope you're paying close attention. Very close attention. Man, I should have italicized that for you. Next sentence. Man must, it's towards like the third to last sentence of paragraph one. Just please follow along with me. Man must be able to give. In order to be a friend, you have to give unselfishly. But the adult is too practical to do things which don't benefit him. Do you see how exactly this relates to our discussion, our learning, I should say, of love? What does it mean to be a good friend? To give unselfishly. But what's the problem if you lose the child within, the innocence within? The adult is too practical to do anything which doesn't benefit him. So can you really love someone if you're only an adult? The Torah definition of love. Because we're always looking to do things that benefit us. Exercise benefits me. Food benefits me. Clean clothing benefits me. Taking a walk on a beautiful day benefits me. We're so practical. We run our lives in such a regimented way. We're always looking to say, what can I do that benefits me? But if you want to be a true friend, if you want to give unselfishly, you have to be able to give. And the mature person is too pragmatic, too self-centered. I really love this shir. This relates to Rabbi Dr. Twersky. Too self-centered. The secular view of love is a love of self-gratification. The Torah view of love is outward-directed love. The mature person, says the Rav, is too pragmatic. He's too self-centered to give. What he does must make sense. But friendship, or substitute the word relationships, and substitute the word loving relationships, and here he really loved Rabbi Shubel, so if you read the whole essay, you'll see what he's referring to. Loving friendship is at times nonsensical from a utilitarian, practical, or useful perspective. Sometimes a relationship of love is nonsensical from a practical perspective. I'll give you the ultimate example. Say you have a parent of a special needs child, really special needs child. The parent spends the whole life giving, 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 giving. And a person has a non-special needs child, they daven that Be'ezrat Hashem one day, a child will grow up, they will carry on the Mesorah, they will have a home, they will have Doros, they will have Peros. A special needs child sometimes can never give anything back to the parent. But does that mean that that parent does not love the child? Elsewhere, in a different piece, a different sefer, the Rav says that Adarab, he doesn't use the word Adarab, but on the contrary, the love of a parent for that child is sometimes even more than for a regular needs child, because they have given so selflessly of themselves. From a practical, utilitarian perspective, you would say that this relationship doesn't benefit me, so why am I involved in such a relationship? Because that's because the Torah definition of love is one, reish ches mem, unkus, two, aleph, ani, hav, I give, three, the absolute ability, says Rabbi Dr. Twersky, to have outward directive love, and said love that is self-gratifying. I hope, Jennifer, if you're listening to this, my Torah, that you like the shir. She was really the impetus for the shir. Continues the Rav, and now he uses the word ahava. I could not have picked a better quote to tie this together. It's 10:23. Oh my God. Ahava she'ena tluya badavar. The Rav is talking about love. that it's not dependent on something. It's not dependent on steak. It's not dependent on you paying my bills. It's not dependent on you making me feel good. It's not dependent on that dress being in style. Ahava she'eina tuluya bedavar. It's not sanctioned by a mature mind. A mature mind is too practical for ahava she'eina tuluya bedavar. But what is man if he cannot give friendship or devotion? In such situations, when man must give, the child in man takes over. He, the child, is capable of giving unselfish loyalty. The adult cannot admire greatness totally without any limitation. The adult, you must take it home and read it. I don't have the time to do it justice. The adult cannot admire greatness totally without any limitation. He cannot condemn iniquity and injustice without reservation, because the mature mind is analytic and the mature person is skeptical by nature. Look at this next sentence. Whew. In greatness, he will find smallness, meaning you see someone who's great and you notice their flaws. They're not as great as they think. In the genius, dullness, he's not as smart as everybody says. In the beautiful, ugly spots, well, she might be gorgeous, but did you see the birthmark on her face? In the saintly, hypocrisy, does he think he's such a tzaddik? Do you know what he said last night? In the noble, the cynical man finds meanness. In a word, the adult is too much of a cynic to admire without buts. I love him, but I admire him, but he's a genius, but he's righteous, but the adult is too much of a cynic to love, he uses the word, with a great, excessive, and mad love. In order to do this, one must turn himself into a child. So 1 second, stay on page 1 of your handout. But look at the top. Look at the top. Pasuk, the first time Ahava appears in the Torah. I highlighted it for you on my screen. That's so nice. I see my sister-in-law's aunt name in Shir. Welcome. My sister-in-law Meir's aunt is joining us. I don't know if it's the first time, but it's very nice to have you. Brucha haba'a. Vayomer kachnes bincha sichidcha she'ahavta. When is the first time Ahav appears in the Torah? In the command of God to Avram. Take your son, your only one, that you love, Yitzchak. In order to really love, you need to find the bincha. This is based on, really, this piece by the Rav crystallizes this, Bashan and Geralt's B'Shem Amram mentioned this idea to me many years ago. Kachnes bincha, based on the piece of the Rav. Take your child within. Take your child within. What did God say to Avram? Kachnes bincha, take you, your child. Es yechidcha, yourself. Asher ahavta, so that you can truly love. What is true love? Give to me, God. Love is to give. I'm asking you to give the ultimate sacrifice. In order to give me, God, the ultimate sacrifice, Aleph Hey Bet, Avram is going to be the Hav. Avram's going to give. You have to find your child within. Kach Na, please take as bincha, you yourself as a child. As Yechidcha, you yourself, your only one. Asher Ahavta, if you want to love me truly, which is to give. It's not pragmatic, it's not useful, it's not self-directed. How does this help Avram to slaughter his son? There's no self-gratification in the slaughter of his son. It's only purely giving, outward-directed love. And to prove piece of the Rav, I think it relates, not that the Rav needs me to prove anything he says, but I think that it relates beautifully to this pasuk. Kach nais bincha, take your child within. As yechidcha, you yourself, your only one. Asher ahavta, you want to find the love within yourself. You need to remove the layers and the years of maturity and cynicism. The pragmatic utilitarian viewpoint that comes with age. You need to give selflessly in order to love. Turn over to page 2. The same is true of faith, says the Rav. Only a child can do it. Skip, I'm not going through this whole piece, I just don't have time. Skip to the last 2 sentences. Quite often, an adult, with all his computations and practical considerations, loses. I make this cheshbon and that cheshbon. It's just not worth the relationship. It's just not worth doing this. It doesn't serve me any purpose, so why bother? quite often an adult with all, I wish I could have gone through the whole thing. He quotes the Hashem as saying, Kinar Yisrael v'ohave, I'm begging you to take it home. And please go over it on Shabbos. Quite often an adult with, and think of the Nachas he'll give Patty if we all go learn her the piece that her son must have worked so hard on. Quite often an adult with all his computations and practical considerations loses out. But the child, the naive believer in miracles, wins the race. The child gives. Think of how a child loves, adores. I'm not talking when they come a little bit older. How a young child adores their mother. The child wants to give, take the food from their mouth and put into mommy's mouth. I have a taste, you have a taste. You have to find the child within to really give of yourself in any relationship and certainly to give to God. Yes, the angelic quality of man, the image of man-child, is perhaps the most unique grant that God gave us. The ability to retain that childlike quality within is the most unique grant that God gave us. So we began by saying that the root word, hey bet, is to give, based on Rav Hirsch. And some people looked surprised, and they had never heard that before. And as I'm preparing shir, I realized it's mamish in this parsha. Parak Lamed Pasuk Aleph. Middle of page 2. Middle of page 2. Chapter 30, verse 1. Vatevi Rachel kilo yalda leYaakov. Vatikane Rachel ba'achosa, Vatomer el Yaakov. She doesn't say tein libanim. She doesn't say tikach libanim. She says hava. Don't look at me. Look at your paper. Hava libanim. V'im ayev tmesa anochi. Hava libanim. You give me children. Hav is to give. So what was she really saying to Yaakov? If you really love me, you will give me a child. In the usage of the word hava, she said, if you really love me, it's a double implication here. Hey, bet is the root of to love, and hey, bet is the root to give. So what Rachel is saying is, Rachel saw she is not giving birth to a child for Yaakov, and she is jealous of her sister, and she says to her husband, who apparently loves her more than anybody in the whole world, she says, if you want to prove your love, hava, you really love me. You love me by the well. You worked for Leah. 7 years you were tricked. You married the wrong wife. If you really love me, as you profess to love me, havali, do you really love me? Then havali banim, then give me children. If you really love me, you will give me children. If you do not give me children, then I am dead. It's not on purpose. It just happens to be that this is the perfect end to my shir. And I am aware that Rabbi Schachter quoted this in his shir. He quoted the Gemara. I don't know where it is in the Gemara, and I did not see his handouts. I am quoting Medrash Bereishis Rabbah. The Medrash Bereishis Rabbah says, Vatomer el Yaakov, hava libanim, v'im ayin meisa anochi. Amar Rabbi Shmuel, you could see it on your sheet. It's the last source on page 2. Amar Rabbi Shmuel, arba chashuvim kemesim, 4 are considered like dead. Mitzora v'suma u'misha eno banim u'misha yarad minichasav. A mitzora, someone who has tzaras, which I do not translate into English, someone who is blind, someone who does not have children, and someone who has been divested of their possessions, i.e. a pauper. Mitzora, from Arod. Arod said to Moshe, you better daven for her, Moshe. Why? Because I'm the Kohen Gadol. I'm no geya bedaver, get it, no pun intended, no geya negius, negatzaras. I can't heal her, because a Kohen cannot heal his relative. There's no other Kohanim around. It's just me. She's my sister. If she doesn't undergo the purification process by Kohen, she's going to be a Mitzora forever. King Chizkiah was a mitzvah forever. What am I going to do? You better daven for her. And Aaron says to Moshe, Al na tihi kemes. Don't let her sister be like a dead person. At which point Moshe davens kel na rafanala. So because Aaron says, don't let her sister be like dead, the Medrash says a mitzvah is like a dead person. We learn it also from Shemos 2:23. Ahi bayamim harabim hahim vayamas melach mitzrayim.
Ayenchu b'nei Hashem min avoda. Vayavas klach Mitzrayim. Rashi says lo meis nitzdareya. So that's another proof that a mitzvah is nechshav kemes. Suma dichtiv b'machashakim hoshivani kemesei olam. In the darkness you have sat me, and Megillas Eicha galos. In the darkness, korban, you have sat me, God, like the dead of the world. So just like a suma is like they are in darkness, so too a blind person is like a dead. Just like we were sitting in darkness and we were like dead because of Chorban and Galus, a blind person, Kaviyachal, sits in darkness, so it must be Nechshav Kemes. Misha Ein Lo Banim, somebody doesn't have children, is considered like dead. Havali, but remember there's a double connotation. What's she really saying to Yaakov? Havali, do you really love me? Like you profess to love me? Then give me children. If not, I'm like dead. Umisha Yarad Minchasav Minayan. Hashem tells Moshe, go back to Egypt. Ki Mesu call a nash. Rachi quotes it on the Chumash. Dasan and Aviram didn't really die, they became poor. Oh, it's this week's parsha also. Why was Yaakov crying by the well? Perachot Tes, why is Yaakov crying? There's two reasons Rashi says why he's crying. One, he sees in Ruach HaKodesh, he's not going to be buried with Rachel. What's the other reason he's crying? Eliphaz took all of his possessions because Esav sent his son Eliphaz to kill Yaakov, his uncle. Eliphaz says, I don't want to kill you. What should I do? Father said, I should kill you. Yaakov said, take all my possessions. Ananias nechshav kemes. And then you could go home and tell father, you killed me. Oh, I didn't even think of it when I was prepared. Ah, another proof from this week's Parsha. Not only did Dasan and Aviram become poor, so Moshe could return to Egypt because they wanted to kill him. It's Mamish and Perachov Tesh. He's crying by the well. Vayef, and he cries. Why? Because he doesn't have any possessions. Eliphaz, his nephew, doesn't want to kill his uncle, but he also has to do Kibbutz of Aim. So how are you going to do Kibbutz of Aim without physically killing your uncle? You're going to make him impoverished. Then go home and tell father, I killed him. So why is Yaakov crying? He doesn't have any jewelry to give the kara. Okay. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz in his Sichos Musar. Look on your sheet. What a beautiful end. It's a very important shir. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz Atzan, his Sichos Musar, maintains that in equating the suffering of these four, you have the source. This is from the Art School Medrash Bereishis Rabba Elucidator, Insight A. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz maintains that in equating the suffering of these four and death, the Medrash is identifying a tribulation common to all of them. To wit, all these four suffer. Oh, that says being butt off. It should say cut off. I had a typo, okay? Make a C instead of a B. To wit, all these four suffer from being cut off from other human beings. A blind person cannot perceive others. A mitzora is banished from all three camps. A poor person cannot bestow gifts upon anyone else. And one without children has no one to nurture. And this last sentence, I'm just going to end with this because it's so perfect. Because what's the last word of this quote? We bring the shir full circle. We started with Rav Shamsher and Fal Hirsch that said, to love is to give. Let's read the last sentence. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz teaches, being separated from the society of others and being unable to benefit others, not being separated and being unable to benefit from others. That's self-directed love, like I love the steak. No, being separated from the society of others like the Suma and the Ani and the Mitzora and Misha and the Banim. Being unable to benefit others. Our directed love. That's the worst consequence of being separated from society. It's not, I'm separated from society, so I'm in a velus like Mitzora because I can't get from you. It's because I can't give to you. And if I can't give to you, there's no love. It is the equivalent of death. For the only life worth living, I'm quoting, is a life of sharing. And the only life worth living is a life of giving. So I urge you to take the handouts home, please. It's an extremely important shir. I thank everyone for coming, even though I thought I wasn't going to be here. I wish you a wonderful Shabbos. Kol tuv to all. Thank you, everybody.